Election 2016.
Hello, I'm Roger Watterson. Middle is another of the 12 Keys constituencies that'll be represented in the new House by two members. It was previously a one-seat constituency. There are four candidates pitching for the two seats, and we shall meet all of them in person in today's Manx Radio 2016 debate. We shall discuss their political views and policies and investigate their current ideas and vision for the Isle of Man for the next 5 years and, we hope, for many years into the future. Well, the four names on the Middle voting paper for the 2016 election next Thursday are businessman William Bowers, former senior advisor of secondary education Paul Crane, former MHK who's seeking re-election Howard Quayle, and banker Bill Shimmons. And we'll meet them all and discover what they have to say in a few minutes. But first, John Moss, as he takes us for a conducted tour of the constituency of Middle.
In Middle, what you see is what you get.
Straight down the middle, it went straight down the middle.
In the north, it shyly kisses the shores of the great Sulby Reservoir before coyly skirting Snaefell and caressing Bennypod, charging down the Baldwin Valley before screeching to a halt on the outskirts of Douglas as if the presence of all that conurbating offends its delicate senses. Edging round the residential areas of the capital, it feels safer once it's round that which was once Douglas South and then became Douglas West before becoming Douglas South again. Heading for the rocky coastline, the blown spume, the cry of the gulls, the whiff of the weed, seaweed, that is, dancing down the coast, perhaps averting its glance and holding its nose ever so slightly past Mary Veg before putting in a sharp U-turn and rollicking joyfully back into the deep, deep peace of the Manx countryside, past Archalligan and Colden and up to Injiebrack. It's a lolloping constituency which welcomes the mountain hare, and in much of its area its residents, if you ask them this and that about politics, would probably answer and look at you curiously. But there is conurbating going on in its rolling rural acres. Round Glenvine and Union Mills there's a growing area of housing, and with it a population whose priorities reflect those of householders all over the island. The cost of this and that, what they can expect when they step back from regular work into retirement. The boundary changes resulted in changing Middle's shape, much in the way gravity changes the shape of you and I. It heads south. That's the Santon bit, now added to the parishes of Braddon and Moran. The number of registered electors, 4,393. The total resident population, 6,568. The mighty A1 slices down the centre of the constituency, a road taking a lot of traffic from Douglas West and from St John's East, usually at a modest pace, but twice a year taking a different kind of traffic a lot quicker. It's home to a stretch of the TT course known, and rightly so, as Ballascarry. Invariably, during the racing, there are accidents here. But it's also a very popular spot for those who want to be enthralled by the courage of others, to watch and to marvel. When you ask someone how they're doing, they might answer, "Middlin'," a response which comes originally from this constituency, meaning you middled regularly. Not too warm, not too cold. A peaceful constituency. But not this evening, as round this table there are those who feel some issues need a bit of table thumping. So, let's hear from them.
Well, John Moss was our middleman today. And now, in keeping in tradition with these constituency programmes, I shall now turn to the candidates and ask them, one at a time, to talk to us for just 1.5 minutes, uninterrupted, on any topic of their choice. And if they run over the allotted time, I'll stop them and move on to the next. So, we'll hear from in alphabetic order. So that means we start with William Bowers.
Good evening, Roger. Good evening, gentlemen. And good evening to all the listeners. This election comes at a critical point in our history. We need to embrace opportunity as well as being able to tackle the challenges ahead. We have the opportunity to elect a new, fresh-thinking, professional and capable government. We must ensure that the next government makes clear and well-planned decisions, working together as a team, with targets that the public can measure them by. These challenges include economic development, the issue of Brexit, healthcare, pensions, and the tackling of the state of the government finances. local issues are also very important, especially in maintaining services that used to be provided by government and are now the responsibility of commissioners. The time for long political debate without any positive outcomes or conclusions has to come to an end. And that is why I'm standing for the House of Keys. Thank you.
Right, that was William Bowers. Now, Paul Crane, please.
Fast am I. Good evening. I'm Paul Crane. I'm married to Anne, and we've lived in the constituency of Middle for 32 years, 16 in Braddon and 16 in Moraine. I'm standing because, as a Manxman, the Isle of Man means an enormous amount to me. I've been hugely proud of what the Isle of Man has achieved, and I want to be proud of what we achieve in the future. I urge the voters of Middle to look at my manifesto and consider giving me one of their votes. I believe I'm already one step ahead of some other candidates. I've already moved beyond the simple desire to grow the economy. Economic growth has not solved the lack of government funding and has not led to improved services. We need to review taxation to make it fairer while still being attractive for inward investment. We need to ensure that economic growth feeds through to people's earnings or company profits that benefit the island. I understand that when companies tuck away their profits, they delay paying taxes that are needed now. I've already thought through the public sector pensions issue. It makes sense to move to a money-purchased public sector scheme over time, but to attempt that immediately would reduce government revenue straight away. I've thought through the population issues and have written and published the book that is informing and challenging the opinions of others. I'm confident that I can make a significant contribution in the House of Keys.
Right, that was Paul Crane. Now to Howard Quayle, please.
Good evening. I'm 49 years old, married to Lorraine, and we have three children. I have lived in Middle for 25 years, and for much of that time, my family and I have been actively involved with the local community. I have had the privilege of representing the constituency for the last 5 years, but before that I worked in the Treasury and the finance sector, as well as establishing three thriving businesses, all in Middle. The past government has achieved a number of successes, such as low crime rates, low unemployment and continued economic growth. To build upon them, the next administration has to set out a clear five-year plan so residents and businesses know the island's direction. This should outline our vision, albeit a realistic one, with an overall objective. It must state where we are going, what our targets are, and how success is to be measured. One priority is to ensure government departments work together and thus achieve even greater efficiencies, yet at the same time improving the services we hold dear. It is essential the next administration includes experienced politicians who will be able to deal with the challenges and opportunities Brexit will bring. I have attended British Irish Council and Westminster meetings on behalf of the Manx government. This experience will be vital given that so many of my former colleagues have now retired. I have led on tackling issues such as growing the economy and pension reform while introducing a new policy aimed at providing affordable health and social care. I believe I have the experience needed to help take our beautiful island forward.
Right, thank you. That was Howard Quayle. And now to Bill Shimmons.
Hello everyone, I'm Bill Shimmons. I've lived in Glenvine with my wife Alison for 13 years. I've worked in senior positions for various international banks across the UK, Europe and Asia. I was the managing director of the Isle of Man Bank for 5 years and I stepped down in July to stand for this election. I've not been in politics before, but I feel this is an advantage as we need some fresh thinking. I have done a number of community roles whilst I was at work over the years, from the scout leader to director of the Chamber of Commerce. I'm currently a governor at Moraine School. I've learnt lots in the last 2 months as I've talked to over 1,000 people on the doorstep. It's been brilliant. Pretty much everyone has been welcoming and friendly. However, many of the residents I've met are frustrated and concerned about the lack of progress on local and national issues. So my key priorities are creating job opportunities and reversing the declining population, increasing our income to fund health, education and other frontline services. I'm also calling for diligent action to put the public finances on a sustainable footing. I am challenging bureaucracy, poor management and outdated thinking to help ensure a positive future for this generation and those that follow. My proposals will help regenerate our island, create opportunities for our young people and protect our glorious countryside.
That was Bill Sherman, thank you. Now, I've been looking through all your manifestos, and many of you have topics which are much the same, and some of you indeed have other topics which are particularly to you. And some deal with a lot more detail than others. And one of those things that comes home to me, Paul, is that on your manifesto, one of the first things that you say is that you think that you appear to be saying that instead of the negative campaigning that is going on and a lot of bad publicity that's being circulated for government, we should be presenting, even in the election, a positive picture. You said too much negative analysis only damages confidence. But surely you would expect in an election a bit of knocking.
I think the Isle of Man has some difficult years ahead. I think we've been through some difficult years. I think we've got difficult years ahead. But I think if we lose sight of the reasons that make the Isle of Man a great place to live and the many benefits here, then we've lost the key plot, really. So, yes, there was a plea at the start to recognise that unlike the neighbouring jurisdiction across the water, we don't have the scale of national debt that they have. We still have reserves. We still have one of the lowest crime rates and one of the lowest unemployment rates you'll find anywhere in Europe. So that we've got many things going for us. So yes, it's absolutely crucial that we maintain the island's confidence and recognise what we've got that's good.
So in other words, you're saying that we actually use a positive promotion. How would you do that?
I am saying we use positive promotion, but yeah. I think it's one of the difficulties we can easily find, especially in days of heavy use of social media, is that everybody knocks everything. So I think it's good just to state it. So at the opening of the manifesto, yes, I've stated the reasons why we should be confident and optimistic.
Right. Now, Bill, in your manifesto, you get into the subject of reducing bureaucracy, which is a topic that comes up virtually at every election, has done for a very long time. Now, it does seem, cry for 50 years or more, but actually it does seem to have increased. How would you go about it? What part would you play to reduce it?
I think we need to look at the size of government, Roger. We seem to have grown exponentially over the years. We have a large number of departments, and it's not clear how well these departments work together. So often, if you're approaching one department of government, you're having to fill out a whole bunch of forms. If you go to the next department, it's the same experience. So my view is we need to look at a single legal entity for government. That will simplify government significantly. It will reduce the amount of bureaucracy and form filling and enable us to focus on the delivery of frontline services, health and education. That's what's important to people.
You're not against then data being shared around all different government departments for different purposes, which is what would be the outcome of that?
Having worked in a large organisation with multiple legal entities, I think sometimes the government hides behind that. I think actually most people expect different departments of government to cooperate and share things with each other. So if we need a single legal entity, and I can certainly see some real benefits in that, I would be keen that we progress that as soon as possible.
Now, William Bowes, you too focused on bureaucracy. That was one of your planks of your platform. What would you do about it if you were elected?
Well, I think it starts at the top. I think personally, we're over-governed at the moment, and I think we have too many MHKs. I think if we were across the water, we'd have one member of the House of Keys for the amount of population we have here on the island.
But is it just a population issue, though?
I think, if I just could finish, Roger, I think that, you know, we have to be clear when we're talking about bureaucracy, that it starts at the top. We have to be far more clear and concise through the levels of government, through MLCs, MHKs, and obviously the Chief Minister, civil servants, and the bureaucracy of communication between the top and the bottom is far too complicated and it must be simplified.
Right. Well, Howard Quayle, you've had first-hand experience of this. Is it that complicated?
Well, there's always ways of improving every system, and I think reducing the size and cost of government, we've reduced the number of people working for government, I think, by 825 people in the last 5 years. More needs to be done there. we've probably still got too many departments, and I think there are a couple of departments that we can merge into one. The size of them, that you'd be able to take out a couple of levels of senior management. We've also got areas of government that really shouldn't be controlled by government, and I've seen them hampered. Their growth has been hampered. I'll give you examples. Our aircraft and shipping registries, they bring a considerable amount of money into the island's economy. There's quite a few businesses based in Douglas and throughout the island that work around those areas. And during my time there in the aircraft registry, we were trying to get, it was growing at a fantastic rate, and we needed extra staff to help make it a good service to the aircraft industry. And we were having fights all the time trying to get extra staff, when the staff salary was going to be paid several times over by the growth in the business. And I think that's an example of an area that should be corporatised, or at least put out at arm's length away from government control, so it can freely move, grow and bring more money in for the island.
But there is a reluctance, isn't there? There has been, not just with the last Parliament, but previous parliaments for many generations almost, to let go, to let outside people run the work of government.
Well, I think we've got to do more working with the people of the Isle of Man. I've said from day one we must be Team Isle of Man going forward. We have lots of willing people who I'm sure all the others have met on the doorstep that want to give their time free of charge, advice, ideas to the people, to the Manx government. And I think we should be listening to respected members of the public who are experts in their field, that are relevant to various government departments, and take action and evaluate the ideas, because none of the four of us sitting around this table have the answers to everything. But I think the clear point is listening to what other people have to say and taking those ideas forward for the benefit of the island.
There was a report, the Scope of Government report, that was produced many years ago and recommended better ways of doing things for a number of these, shall we say, ancillary areas of government. And it's really disappointing that very little progress has been made. So I guess the question that I'm picking up is, why is that? Why have we not grasped the nettle on some of these issues?
Well, that report was revisited towards the end of the last House, hasn't it? Some elements of it have been taken up now, but I must have quite delayed.
It was quite a damning review if you look at the actual outcomes that happened.
Yeah, it was called the Quayle Report, and it was disappointing when the Council of Ministers tried to move just a simple thing like the post office moves. We were outvoted on something as simple as that, and it's now, I think, proven to be a success. The recent changes in Ramsay and Douglas, no one wanted them, but we needed to save money and protect the future of the post office. And I think the politicians coming in this next House must have the backbone to make some of the tough decisions, rather than constantly looking over their shoulder and being concerned about getting re-elected, that they need to ensure that they do what's right for the island. And I think, having taken on some of the most toughest jobs in government in the last 5 years, when I've been around door knocking, people have said, we respect you for making the tough decisions. And I think instead of being worried about doing decisions where you're making decisions to get re-elected, the next House has to concentrate on doing what's right for the long-term sustainability of the Isle of Man.
One of the most
another factor to this, Roger, in terms of the actions that have been taken in relation to the Scope of Government reports, and actions such as the centralisation of certain services. We're probably 3 years into this by now, but we've actually had no independent external review of how successful that's been. So we followed there a strategy that's a bit of a novel approach, and we haven't looked at whether it's worked or not, and that's absolutely essential to do that.
One of the issues which is a sacred cow in Manx politics, of course, is low taxation. And I notice, Paul Craig, you said that you're looking for fairer taxation, and you talk about a different tax strategy based on success, a whole series of new aspects of taxation. How would you go about that?
I think taxation is a key issue for the island, because we've been growing the economy for the last 30 odd years. Indeed, the last 5 years, the economic growth has been very substantial, in excess of 5% most years, I think. But that economic growth has not done what people hoped it would, that it would make up for the loss of VAT funds and that it would fund public services, because over the 5 years that the economy's grown, government income has flatlined, and in fact it has been below inflation. So growing the economy is not contributing to growing services at all. And therefore we need to look at what the government income levels are. And I think here, when you say that I've mentioned about tax being unfair, I'm picking up on what Eddie Tier has said three times this year now about, first of all, in his budget speech about the assessor of taxation reporting to him that there was tax planning going on around 010 that was inappropriate and unacceptable. And he's asked her to make this more fair. And he also brought national insurance into that and hoped that that too would be made more fair. But I think the key issues in here are we have created in 010 a vehicle for avoidance of tax on quite a new scale, if you like, that it's possible now for companies to be accruing money. They may have to pay tax on it when they take the money out eventually, but in the meantime, the tax is not being paid and we need it now. And there's a whole industry growing up around that. I've got with me an Isle of Man savings tax guide that actually relates to how you can avoid taxes in the Isle of Man. Many company owners, it says, are able to avoid national insurance on their own income by taking dividends instead of salary. So it's actually telling you how to do it. Thanks to the dropping of the attribution regime, company profits can only be taxed when paid out of dividends. What this means is that if the shareholders don't need to distribute the company's profits to fund their personal expenditure, the money can be kept tax-free inside the company. So we've got a whole series...
Until it is distributed.
But then there are ways around that, aren't there? Because if you've accumulated a large sum of money, it's actually possible then to sell the company to a high net worth individual who can release the funds without paying tax because they've already reached the cap. So we've got so many routes now, and concerns about companies that are zero taxed here but they send the profits away and they're taxed somewhere else, that tax should be here. So a tax review before we undertake the new tax strategy, which is due this autumn, the 13-16 tax strategy has come to an end. So I think tax needs to be talked about, but I would like to point out I am keen to keep the low taxes to attract inward investment, to keep the 0% company, to keep the 20% income tax. But we'll only be able to keep the low taxes if people are paying those low taxes.
Right. So, Paul, are you proposing tax increases then? Is that basically what you're saying?
No. Have you not listened? Let me just repeat it again.
I want to ask you a straight question.
No.
Because I think this is important for the public.
I think it's important for the public to hear.
I want you to make it quite clear.
I've made it absolutely clear. I am not proposing any tax increases.
I am looking to make sure
that we're collecting the tax that we're entitled to. I'm glad you've clarified that because I want that to be clear too. I'm not proposing tax increases.
Good.
Well, Bill Shimmer, this business about tax increases, I mean, that's one issue, but the collecting of taxes, there was a lot of argument for a long time over United Kingdom corporate bodies here in the Isle of Man who actually were paying their tax back into the United Kingdom, who had benefited the Isle of Man. I mean, we've been missing out on a lot of tax revenues that were possible for a long time, haven't we?
I don't believe that the scale of tax abuse is anything like what is being suggested. Mm. If there is tax abuse, yes, we should clamp down, and absolutely, I completely agree. My understanding is that our taxation team are now acting really effectively, and I would suggest that we have extreme caution before making any significant increases to taxation. There is a real risk that this will trigger further depopulation, and if we do that, the island could enter a very bleak position. So my view is we need to be very, very careful.
But did Paul not say, though, he wasn't talking about increasing taxes, he was talking about collecting it in a better manner?
Indeed, and that's what I'm saying in terms of we should clamp down on any tax abuse, but we need to be realistic in terms of our operation.
Howard Quayle?
Yeah, I have to agree with Paul that we have to jump on anyone who's trying to do aggressive, inappropriate tax planning. I mean, the island's unique selling point is a low efficient tax rate, and we must maintain this. If we try and increase our tax rates, we're going to send out a very bad message to the outside world and damage confidence in our economy. What is worrying that that our tax receipts were down £11 million from an estimated £210 million to £199 million in the last financial year. So I fully support Nicola and her team in the Income Tax Department coming up with a strategy on ensuring that people who are trying to be clever and not pay taxes are jumped on from a great height and made to pay.
there is a feeling, isn't it, that people, nobody likes paying tax. It's a matter of principle, whatever country you go to, but nevertheless are prepared to do so if they think it's been spent wisely. Why do you think, Howard, in the recent months and years, people are beginning to feel that government expenditure is just not right? We get this time and time again.
Well, I think when you lose a third of your income and government starts to introduce charges that maybe they haven't charged for a long time, then people feel very cross about these increased charges, and then they obviously start to look at what government are spending, and when things are done badly by certain government departments, it really irritates them, and that's to be expected. I think we've got to be open and honest, and government have made some mistakes in the last few years, and maybe haven't handled the PR very well. You know, I suppose to address it, the number one complaint I've had when I've gone round the road is on the doorstep has been the slock. You know, people weren't happy with Minister Gawn's comments. I've spoken to him about that, and you know, his answer to me was that he had to maintain that road before a bad winter came along and more damage would have been done. But unfortunately, what he said in the inquiry to the select inquiry, the financial inquiry, he came out with a phrase which maybe he didn't mean to say. But
I think there's a no doubt. I've picked up the same. Probably the most common comment is the issue of the slog. But actually, that's just one example of many where the government has really had very poor financial management. The thing that I think concerns most people is the public sector pension deficit. Because if you look at the slog, that's in the hundreds of thousands. If you look at the inaction that's been taken in the public sector pension deficit, that's in the hundreds of millions. It's a massive number. And for me, we can talk about the slog, we could talk about the horse trams, but really, it's a bit of a smoke screen. The biggest financial issue, the elephant in the room, is the public sector pension deficit.
But don't you think that the current, the outgoing administration now has actually finally tackled that? Are you not happy with the plans they put forward?
No, I'm really, really concerned about it. And many people agree with me. They think it is wrong that we're continuing the scheme, which is completely unsustainable. I think actually asking new entrants to contribute ever-increasing amounts to the public sector pension deficit also, it feels a bit like mis-selling. We're asking them to contribute, young people, of often perhaps not financially aware, to a scheme that just will not be there in 20 years. I also think it's irresponsible to acknowledge we've got a problem, but we can't deal with it now. That has been typical of what the government has done for 10 years.
Well, it is, of course, relying, isn't it, William Bowers, on an increase in growth in the economy as well.
It is, but if we could just get back to the pension issue before we go on to the growth in the economy.
Well, that's what they hope to pay for it with.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I think the major issue we have is going forward with the public pension fund. I think it's unsustainable at the moment, and I think anybody who is coming forward to a position in the public sector should automatically be put into a new scheme. And I think Bill will agree with me on this one. It is top of my list.
But you're not saying you ignore the obligations under the old scheme?
No, we can't. We have to be obligated to the existing scheme. Now, getting back to how we're going to fund it, that's a different challenge altogether. But as I say, any new entrants must not come into the existing scheme.
It's a different challenge you can't ignore, though. Howard?
Yeah, if I can just point out, it was, you know, we have not dealt with it, we've taken a step in the right direction. I mean, I led on this in 2012, my first budget speech. I gave a budget speech calling it a Ponzi scheme, saying that we needed to address it because it was going to severely damage the island's economy going forward. In 2014, I moved a motion in Timwell saying it was unsustainable and unaffordable and that we should review it. Timwell supported my call for that. Now, in a perfect world, we should close the scheme to new members. But unfortunately, at this moment in time, we've got a £75 million shortfall in our budget to find each year. And if we close it to new entrants, we lose the income coming in. When you've got a Ponzi scheme, you're reliant on the money coming in from those still working to fund the people who have already retired. So we wouldn't just have a £75 million to balance the accounts, you know, this coming period. We would have another £30 million on top of that. So I agree with with Bill that it must be closed, and we must work on it in this next administration going forward. But I think the first and foremost, we have to get on top of the £75 million deficit, and then when we're closer with that, then we look at closing it to new entrants, because otherwise I think 75 million plus another 30 million, we might have another 30 million if the VAT rate is cut with Theresa May in the future when they're trying to kickstart the UK economy, a 2.5% cut for example down to 17.5%, we lose another 30 million. So I think first and foremost, get on top of the deficit, and nearer the time we must close it to new entrants.
Just putting things off for a rainy day. I mean, use the word sustainable and irresponsible. That for me sums it up. Things may not get better in the future. We need to be responsible. Mm. This is wrong.
Aren't we creating a further problem in the deficit if we're allowing new entrants into the existing scheme? Surely it is the correct time now to close the scheme to all new entrants.
But you haven't come up with any ideas on how you're going to find the money, William.
I tell you, this all boils down to economic development and how we can increase government funds.
Before leaving the pension issue, I think it's absolutely vital here that we recognise you can't rush these things through. We've just been through a series of negotiations which has changed government pension systems quite substantially. We have to remember that we've still got to attract and recruit people and retain people within the public service. So some of the groups here, there's teachers, for example, who aren't quite part of this scheme yet, medics. But they're under pressure to join in, medics. There are real recruitment issues with these, and some of them have got pensions that have got parity within the UK, and breaking those, it becomes problematic. So I think we need to be careful. Yes, I fully accept it's not sustainable, but I think it's going to take more than just a year or two to sort that through. There's a lot of negotiation, and it may take us 20 years before we can stop this unfunded scheme and make it fully funded and still pay off the pensions.
So, I'm sorry, I just don't accept that this is a recruitment issue. I think from a recruitment perspective, I think it's difficult to attract professionals to come here when they look at our scheme, which was described as a Ponzi scheme. Right. It puts people off,
The phrase the Ponzi scheme is unfortunate, and Howard was criticised by some of his colleagues at the time because a Ponzi scheme is illegal in the first year, and this is not an illegal scheme. So, yes, this is an unsustainable scheme, but I don't think it helps to use labels like that.
How can you support an unsustainable scheme?
I'll
have to stop you all there for a moment, because it is time to recharge the batteries. We'll have to take a commercial break, but we'll be back in 3 minutes.
Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Today's 2016 election debate features the candidates for the constituency of Middle. They are Bill Shimmins, Howard Quayle, Paul Crane and William Bowers. Well, we'll move off now, subject of pensions, I think, and have a look at something else, because, Bill, in your manifesto, you said that the population of the Isle of Man needs to grow. You think that that's the answer to a lot of our problems, is an enlarged population. And you went on to talk about 1,000 people a year. That sounds an enormous amount of intake.
Well, actually, it's not, Roger. The Isle of Man has had that sort of intake in the past, in the 80s, mm-hmm. and it's grown successfully. But we do need to learn from that time and do it in a much more sensible and planned way. Many aspects of Ireland will function more effectively and operate more efficiently with a larger population. What I'm proposing is essential, because it's declining, our population is declining and getting older. What I'm looking to do is accommodate much of the population growth by encouraging urban living. If you look at Douglas, it's a sad shadow of its former self.
What do you mean by urban living? Just living in the town?
Well, if you look at across Europe, there's been a renaissance in urban living. Mm-hmm. Where we need to stop concreting over the Manx countryside and regenerate the towns, to repopulate them, to provide vibrant places for people to live and work. There is more to regeneration than pavements, Roger.
Roger, can I question Bill on what he said about population? Mm. Because you raised the figure there of 1,000 and said it sounds a lot, but actually Bill then continues to say that one of his priorities is to have 20 economically active people each week. Mm. Now that would give you 1,000 economically active people, but every economically active person is likely to come with dependents. So we're not talking about 1,000 a year, we're talking about 1,500 a year, more likely 7,500 over a 5-year period. We haven't seen growth on that scale, and then the Isle of Man where the movement in and the movement out are both considerable, to have growth of 7,500 in 5 years is likely to be giving you 20,000 in.
Definitely 1,000 a year is what I'm looking at.
So the 20 economically active people each week.
It takes account of people coming and going. So I'm very comfortable with 1,000. We can manage with 1,000.
So the 20 economically active people each week delete. Is wrong.
20 is the growth that we're looking for each week. Definitely.
And you have taken not into account with that the demand that there will be on schools and health and all the other infrastructure facilities.
Absolutely. And if you look at many of our infrastructure, it's designed for a population of 100,000. Now, I think 1,000 a year is eminently sensible, and we have to do this. If you look at our population demographics, we really have very little alternative.
Well, what do you think these people would do, Bill? William Bowers, what do you think they would do? You were talking about building enterprise before.
Absolutely. I think there are two issues here. Creating new job opportunities here on the Isle of Man, and with that comes the increase in population. Over the next 5 years, the government have set aside £50 million in the enterprise development scheme. I am firmly behind that plan. I do have slight concerns over it, though, that the £50 million budget has been handed to a UK-based company called Spark Impact. Now, this fund has been set up to encourage growth and expansion of existing businesses, and also to encourage new businesses to come to the Isle of Man and set up businesses here. Now, I'm slightly concerned that this fund is being managed by a UK company. At the very least, we need some sort of representation at Spark, because our future depends on this money being spent wisely and for our best possible return. I think that who better to sell the Isle of Man, because let's face it, if we want to encourage new businesses to the Isle of Man, and we do have the facilities to cater for new businesses, but we need the workers to come with them, and I think we're very poor at marketing the Isle of Man. Some people in the south of England don't even know where the Isle of Man is.
Of course, this takes us to how we're going to do this. Howard Quayle.
Yeah, well, if I could just touch on the first point before we jump from population control to the enterprise fund, I'd just like to say...
But to a certain extent, they're linked.
We've got a problem. We've got a 53% increase over the next 25 years of the population over 65, but we've only got a 2% increase in the working population in that same period. So I think we all agree we're going to have to increase the population of the Isle of Man, but I think it must be targeted. It just can't be... any area. I think we've got to look at the 20 to 40 year old bracket. We need to increase nearer to Jersey levels over the next 15 years, but it must be, as I say, targeted for skilled workers, people that are going to come and bring something to the Isle of Man. We need to be flexible and fluid to our approach. We need to work with the business community, see where the areas of growth that are required, where they need the workforce, and then enable those people to move to the Isle of Man, not doing away with the work permit situation, but making it as speedily, as speedy and reactive as possible. Now, 90% of work permits are turned around in 10 days. We need to be much more efficient than that and give greater resources. Moving on to the Enterprise Fund, which Economic Development launched only a couple of months ago, as William says, by Spark Impact have got the contract. I'm delighted to say that was my baby. I moved that in Tim Wilder's a motion in 2013 that we should set up a £50 million enterprise, because it's not just a £50 million fund. That's what government will give out to businesses over 5 years, but they have to put a percentage of their own money in. So you're looking at up to about £180 million of extra money circulating around the economy, and then the multiplier effect will be a significant boost. But just to reassure William, the Treasury do have an input into the business decisions. Obviously, Spark Impact go out and assess the companies who are wanting to take that money.
Can I just butt in there? I believe that this contract went out to tender, and the Manx company was very, very close in obtaining this contract. Can you give me the reasons why behind a local company was not given the opportunity to handle this fund for us?
Well, I'm afraid, William, I'm the health minister, and whilst I moved the motion in 2013, it's an economic development.
Which you helped set up?
Yeah, but...
Surely you should have some input.
I would like to have had some input, but the development of it was economic development, and I'm afraid you have to let go sometimes of your ideas and let others take it forward.
If I can take an opportunity, Roger, just to comment on the population and the enterprise development scheme. With the population, I think there's a lack of understanding of where we're at. We've actually been having net emigration of people in their 20s since 2006, so this is a big thing to turn around. We've had a decline in the birth rate of 23% in 5 years. We've now got deaths succeeding births at 200 a year. I think it would be a tremendous achievement if we can turn that population around and get us up even just an average of 500 a year over the next five years. I think it would be an achievement.
This is like what went on in the 1950s and 60s.
There's a danger of depopulation really kicking in. So we must guard that.
It's one of the biggest risks we face, but I absolutely agree.
It does need clarity of policy. We need to be clear about what it is we're trying to achieve. And this is where it is married to the Enterprise Development Scheme. And the crucial thing about the Enterprise Development Scheme, when you're paying public money here, public taxes here, and you're paying it to firms that are not now here, to bring in people who are not now here, you need to be very, very clear about what you're going to get for it from the people who are here, whose money it is, and we need to be clear how we're measuring that.
Well, you're just talking about...
Can I just point out that Spark Impact are based on the Isle of Man now? They've set an office up on the island.
But you are talking just about, at the moment, population numbers, but the one thing that hasn't come into this yet, Bill Shibbins, is who you're going to... attract. You're not going to just have a car plan. You have to target the people you want, surely.
Oh, absolutely. And that is what I'm looking to suggest in terms of businesses need skilled people to grow. The work permit regime is a choke on the island at the moment. And if we can relax the work permit regulations to overcome the skill shortages, that will enable our existing companies here to hire more people, create more job opportunities. And the role of the Enterprise Development Fund is an inward investment scheme. Every country has to have an inward investment scheme in this multinational world that we live. So what is essential is that we spend this money in a responsible way to create thousands of jobs. And that could be right across the sectors, Roger. It needs to be very targeted for the benefit of the Isle of Man. It needs to be focused on job creation.
There used to be a fear, wasn't it?
We need to target our own young people to return, and that's something that came out of the Moran requisition last night.
Therefore we need a variety of new jobs creating so that we can attract our graduates back to the Isle of Man. I think we have to probably look at other businesses apart from e-gaming and the finance sector and introduce light engineering, blue chip. Businesses. There are a lot of avenues, and we have the infrastructure here to be able to cope with these type of new businesses. As I said, for us to attract graduates back to the Isle of Man, we have to have a wider variety of career opportunities for them.
Well, you said in your manifesto, Howard, that you wanted Howard Quayle, you wanted to restructure DED. Which is for part of this package, I would think.
Yes, well, I mentioned earlier about taking aircraft and shipping registry out of its control so it can be run at arm's length. We don't spend enough on economic development. We give a very small amount of money compared with our competitors. We spend vastly less than our competitors on helping to grow our economy, and I'd like to see economic development restructured with more money for tourism, for all the other, not just tourism, but all the other areas. I think its net spend is 1 point something million pounds. It has an income of about 30 million, but that's from receipts from various divisions, but its net spend is just over £1 million. Jersey is spending 10 times more than we are, but it's important that we look at getting the right workforce to the Isle of Man. And government have already started, and this week they had a meeting with I think it was 100 representatives from the business community to discuss the ways of how we're going to attract people to the Isle of Man and the business areas. So government has already started, and there was, I think William mentioned manufacturing. We've trebled the number of apprenticeship places at the College of Further Education. We've built a new manufacturing development there.
And there are jobs for these people, aren't
there? Yes, there are. And in fact, it's oversubscribed. I think it was three times oversubscribed, the University College of the Isle of Man this year. So
I think it's fantastic that we all agree job creation for our young people is a key priority.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
We're all agreed on that.
One of the things which crops up from time to time is a public concern that a lot of our major connections to the UK, the shipping lines, the airlines and so on, are all in outside hands. Do you support the view that perhaps it's about time that we took direct control of these types of facility and had contracted them out to other people to run? You don't, Bill Shibben, you don't seem to like the idea of state ownership.
No, our government needs to slim down. And I question, really, do we have the capability or resources to operate air
shipping lines? Not to run them, just to own them.
I think if we look at our financial position, I'm not convinced. The shipping lines and airlines are absolutely key for us as an island. We need to be able to have regular, reliable links across to the UK and other places. But owning our own company, I think we tried that, it didn't work out too well. If you look at what other island nations do, they also have airlines and shipping lines, and actually the general consensus is it's not a good model to operate. It becomes just another part of the civil service and run along civil service lines. I don't think the civil service is the right people to have transport lines.
I agree totally with Bill's comments there. Not only we shouldn't be running our own shipping lines, we shouldn't be running sweetie shops up at the hospital either.
You've said that twice, and that's most unfair. I've made it absolutely clear that we're doing that as a short-term thing whilst we have the tendering investigation. It's a petty thing to bring up. If we can go back to the shipping,
I'd just like to finish.
Provided
we have assurances in a new user agreement of new vessels and of a check on fares, that we have to commit for the meantime to the steam packet. We'd be foolish to waste time on money and looking at any other avenues.
Right. I agree. Now, regulation is absolutely at the heart of this, because if we accept that there has to be a monopoly in shipping, then it has to be well regulated. Okay. And I'm not sure how good our regulation has been.
I'm going to have to stop there because we're literally running out of time now. So that just really leaves me to ask you all to go around the table in reverse order to finish off the programme, and ask you to tell us why the electorate in Middle should cast a vote for you. And can I start with you first of all, Bill Shibben?
Thanks, Roger. My proposals will help regenerate our island, create opportunities for our young people and protect our glorious countryside. We need a government which is decisive and takes action to overcome the challenges we face. I bring financial expertise, professional capability and common sense to the role. If elected, I will help the people of Middle and the Isle of Man secure a positive future.
That was Bill Shibben's. Howard Quayle, please.
Okay, I would encourage you to read my manifesto to see what I've delivered during my time in Tynwald. Hopefully, I have shared with you enough information to encourage you to put your trust in me for a second term, representing you proudly as the MHK for Middle. We are elected to be national politicians, but we must not forget we are also constituency MHKs, and I have worked, and if elected, will continue to do so, with the local authorities to take forward issues raised by the residents of Middle.
Right, thank you, Howard Quayle. Paul Crane, please.
For more than 30 years, I've served the island's young people and schools. I've served as a local commissioner in Moraine, and I've served the sporting community through the Island Games. If elected, I will continue to serve Middle and the Isle of Man to the best of my ability.
Right, thank you, Paul Crane. And now William Bowers, please.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you, gentlemen. The next government needs to be fresh in its approach, capable, professional, clear and concise. And I believe that I have the strength and character and even more passion to get the job done.
Well, there we are then. That was our four candidates for Middle: Bill Shibben, Howard Quayle, Paul Crane and William Bowers. So in today's programme we met all four of them, and then in the next of the series, which will be at the same time tomorrow, when Beth Espy will meet the five who are pitching for Onchan. I'm Roger Watterson. Goodbye.